Thanks for having me today. I will be talking about the bringing down the flag, streamlining the growing population of patients on contact precautions for methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus study I participated in last winter. We conducted the study at Sanford Health, which is a tertiary care center that is an integrated health system with a hospital that has over 500 beds, a multi-specialty clinic, and multiple satellite clinics within about 120-mile radius of the center. I don't have any personal financial relationships to disclose. So methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which I will refer to as MRSA or MRSA for the remainder of the presentation, is a serious potential pathogen that is endemic in healthcare settings. The CDC recommends that patients with a history of MRSA be placed on contact precautions as a way to decrease hospital transmission. Contact precautions consist of donning and doffing gowns and gloves upon patient room entry and prior to exit. And as you can see in the picture here, this is what a typical healthcare worker garbed for contact precautions would look like. Unlike the recommendations for using contact precautions, the guidelines to discontinuing them are much less clear and without consensus. A national survey of over 2,500 members of the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology showed that although most places do have policies for removing contact precautions, they rarely or if ever screen their patients for doing so. Respondents also were divided nearly evenly between the number of specimen collections they required to be negative in order to do so, the time between specimen collections, the eligibility criteria, and the site of collection. Sanford, like most other facilities, has this sort of once positive, always positive approach. So in order for a patient to have their contact precautions or their flag removed from their chart, they have to go through a series of rigorous testing that involves two cultures a week apart off of antibiotics. So as you can imagine, in a hospital setting, most patients are on antibiotics, and a typical hospital stay is not longer than 7 days. So we rarely or if ever accomplish this. In the clinic setting, patients aren't usually screened for them, and payment for this type of work is also quite variable. So the benefit to this approach is quite controversial. While it has been shown to be beneficial to use contact precautions in outbreak settings, the same researcher support isn't there for preventing endemic spread within a hospital. There is a substantial burden to the patient who is on contact precautions, which I'll go to in the next few slides here, and the cost to the healthcare system can be quite significant also. So on this slide here, there's a couple studies that looks at the adverse events related, the increasing adverse events in patients who are on contact precautions as compared to patients who are not in contact precautions. So as you can see, the overall adverse events, preventable adverse events, inappropriate vitals, documentation, days without a doctor's note are significantly higher in patients who are on contact precautions. Furthermore, the average delay days for skilled nursing facility placement is also quite a bit higher. A body of literature also suggests that there are negative psychosocial and psychological effects of contact precautions. There's reported significantly higher scores on depression and anxiety skills, increased reports of feeling neglected with lower self-esteem and feelings of anger, and patients on contact precautions have been shown to be less likely to understand nursing explanations, which have obvious negative implications to a patient. So moving on to our study itself, our research hypothesis was that a single nasal PCR test offers reasonable negative predictive value for MRSA carriage. So our two research questions within this hypothesis were, one, what percent of patients with a past MRSA flag clear themselves of MRSA colonization? And two, will a more streamlined process that allows for a more rapid screening have adequate negative predictive value to accomplish contact precaution discontinuation? So after obtaining IRB approval, we went forward with identifying and enrolling patients into our study, and we did this from June to December 2013. Our first step was to identify patients in our system using the EMR who have a MRSA flag on their chart, and we identified over 3,500 patients. Next, we went on to send letters to patients who are eligible. So not all of the 3,500 patients were eligible. We did have eligibility criteria that required someone to be over the age of 18, reside within 80 miles of our study center, and patients who have not had a positive MRSA culture within the last 3 months. So we sent letters to over 1,000 patients, and of those, 144 responded, consented to participate in the study, and presented to their initial visit. So this slide helps depict our study design for our interventions and our specimen collection. Myself and a few other staff members were trained in appropriate collection of specimens by the principal investigators. And during encounter one, patients had both nares swabbed by a single specimen, and the axilla and groin were swabbed in a similar way. If any wounds were present, we swabbed those as well. A swab from each of these specimens was used in microbiology for culture, and a second swab for only the nasal PCR was sent to the molecular laboratory for PCR testing. So after encounter one, as you can see here, if any test came back positive, the patient's flag was remained and the patient was unenrolled from the study. If all of the tests came back negative, the patient was eligible to move on to encounter two, where they had the same tests repeated. After encounter, it is important to note here too that if a patient did present to their first encounter on antibiotics, we asked them to come back for two visits off of antibiotics. So they were essentially repeating the study off of antibiotics. In encounter two, patients had the same set of specimens tested, and again, if any test was positive, their MRSA flag removed and they were unenrolled from the study. At this point, if all of their tests had come back negative, their MRSA flag was removed and then the patient was unenrolled from the study. So this chart here shows a breakdown of all of our patients. We had 140 patients complete the study. Four of our initial 144 dropped out after their first encounter. Of our 140 patients, 101 were completely negative by all tests at all visits. So 72% of our patients no longer appeared to carry MRSA. Of our 39 positive patients, 33 were detected at encounter one, 23 of which were detected by both PCR and culture, 7 by PCR only, and 3 by culture only. 6 of our patients were detected at encounter 2, 3 by PCR and culture, and 3 by culture, or 3 by PCR only, excuse me. So this shows some of the values we looked at here, and we compared one single nasal PCR in encounter 1 to any positive test at any encounter. So we had a rather restrictive criteria for determining whether someone was positive. So if any test came back positive at any visit, they were considered a MRSA positive patient. Our sensitivity for this was 76.9%, which does reflect this restrictive criteria. Our specificity and positive predictive values were both 100%. And so, again, any person who was positive was considered to have MRSA. So we didn't allow for any false positives. So that's why those numbers are 100%. And then our negative predictive value, which is our value of interest, was 91.8%. So we want our negative predictive value to be high because we want, when our test says someone is negative, we want them to, in fact, be negative so they're not carrying MRSA in the hospital. So we also looked at some clinical and demographic characteristics associated with positivity. We looked at quite a few, age, race, gender, and then clinical characteristics such as chronic wounds, diabetes, and we had a whole list of them. And of all of them, only age, the mean time since someone's last positive MRSA culture, and patients who had an ICU stay within the last 3 months came back significantly associated with MRSA. We also looked at antibiotic use. So the two takeaways from this slide are, one, antibiotics did not appear to affect any of our outcomes. So all of our patients who were completely negative on their first encounter when they were on antibiotics, but then also on their follow-up, their two follow-up encounters where they were not on antibiotics. The second takeaway from this slide is that our rate of positivity in our patients with antibiotics is essentially the same as it was in our study population. So 75% of our patients were completely negative, and 25% of our patients were positive. So our conclusions were that the majority of our patients with a history and were flagged for MRSA no longer appeared to be colonized with MRSA. Two, the likelihood of persistent carriage increased with age, a more recent history of carriage, and a history of an ICU stay in the last 3 months. Our single nasal PCR test did have a reasonable negative predictive value for identifying these patients, and that screening patients with a single nasal PCR might yield marketed cost savings and better patient care for patients with past MRSA flake. So we did have a couple limitations to our study and one selection bias, so patients who came in for this visit might have been a different population than patients overall. Two, we did have a relatively small sample size as compared to our 3,000 patients that did have an MRSA flag on their chart. And lastly, our lower sensitivity could be problematic if we had a high prevalence population. So I'd like to thank Dr. Paul Carson, who is the PI for the study, and the rest of our study team who participated in this. Are there any questions?
We have time for one question, and we can invite the speakers to come to the front.
Okay.
We have about 20 minutes of questions.
Yes? I do not know that we did a power calculation, but Dr. Carson is the PI of the study, and he's here today and might be able to answer that question for me. Thank you.
We can get our speakers to the front, please. Do we have any other questions?
Right, and I think that that's the way it was interpreted. Was I think a lot of respondents knew of a child through perhaps their internet research. The survey unit folks stick as close as they can to a script. If people do have questions, they will do their best to answer them. They also gave a fair number of people Angela's contact information, and she had some fairly intense, I think, discussions with parents. But you're right. I think there was kind of a misinterpretation by by parents of that particular question and perhaps some of the other questions as well. It's hard to design a perfect telephone survey. The HPV.
So
yeah.
Were they exemptors?
They were exemptors, and they were included in this set. And that's one of the things that I would kind of take a look at, is if the responses for some of those folks are different than the rest of the population.
I think that would be very interesting as well.
I do too. Yeah.
Got
to be notarized. I think the law needs to be changed. I think there's too much wiggle room.
And my curiosity was, did you have legal counsel that suggested you have that third option there for wiggle room?
Yeah, well, that's verbatim from the law. The actual statute is written so that people can have a personally held religious belief. So I think in order to change that, we'd have to go and get the law changed. So, and there was a lot of discussion with legal regarding the new form. Yeah.
Ideally, they'd have to sign something that said, all this research has shown the safety of vaccine. I understand this, and I still do not want my child vaccinated.
Right. And I think there was some discussion around whether we can require people to do that.
Well,
So the child can participate in school, but
your kid can come, and then you've got 30 days to do it.
That's like a nice idea.
I did a similar study in Arizona, and I
Mm-hmm. Can they go to a chiropractor or a naturopath and get that affidavit? Or does that
have to be gosh, that's a good question. I do you know, Angela? Well, that's his question, yeah. Right. Well, and I suspect, you know, we did see a 20-something percent drop in the number of exemptions, but my guess is that once people figure out how to game the system or find the providers that will sign these certificates blindly, then... Oh gosh, I think that 2011 one had been around for a long time before they decided to change it. But, you know, I think with the kind of recurrence of pertussis and a lot of outbreaks and in New Mexico and elsewhere, we started really taking a look at who we're allowing to exempt from vaccines. Oh, every year. I believe it. Is it every 9 months or every year?
Every year, and then it's good for 9 months.
Yeah. Right. So.
Small thing. Would you say that cultural reasoning falls under the umbrella of religiosity? I know family, culture, bonding, if you want to take care of our children, that kind of thing is.
Right. I mean, I think that the law was written to not include that under religion. However, I think that's how a lot of people interpret it. Yeah. Thanks.
Any other questions for other speakers?
I think
actually nationally, there's really no consensus for policy. So if a patient's readmitted, they're considered positive. So
well, actually, California, it's the law.
Minnesota does too.
Yeah.
North
so
Carolina
I was just wondering if
it's okay.
Yeah, it's actually part of state regulation.
Right.
Whatever the state regulatory body is, in Minnesota's case, it's the Department of Health. They require it. That actually was a significant limitation for us to change our policy because we have patients from both sides,
sure.
So we've had to kind of not been able to fully implement the policy change like we want.
Sure. Yeah.
But
no, it makes it easier if you have a loan.
Right.
Yeah. And could I ask a question? I think you said that the chance of male female transmission, you counted it the same as. Would that make a difference if you put in the real risk?
No, we can do that. We can definitely do that too.
Because there is a difference.
Yeah, male to female is higher than female to male.
Right.
Yeah, we can definitely add that too.
Yeah.
But for now, we didn't consider that.
Could I just make a comment about, you know, in Los Angeles, yuppies, exactly the same, higher income, you know, more education, but this includes healthcare workers as well. So they're the same group that won't accept, in California anyway, Southern California, they're the same group that won't get vaccinated either. Because we have a law to help that too, in LA, mandatory, you wear a mask or you get vaccinated. You get vaccinated or you wear a mask.
Yeah.
and so that's helped out. But the same with the mothers and babies, the same yuppies. What are we going to do about them?
I think I saw a news or magazine article that there are some parts of Southern California that have immunization rates similar to the South Sudan.
Oh, yes.